Everything has a price, and the price of freedom is greater than all else. The story of conquest shows the brutality of war and the cost of freedom. It shows the sacrifice it takes and the hardships those who fight for it endure. In conquest, nothing is sugar-coated. Every detail brings the world to life, and every character, city, and kingdom has something unique about it that keeps you intrigued. In a world filled with complacency, be different. Join the rebellion today and fight for freedom. The Quest for Freedom is available on Amazon, Google Play, Apple Books, and Kobo. Use code FANTASY for $3 off on the official site.
Welcome to another episode of the Fantasy Writers Toolshed. I'm your host, Richie Burling, and today I'm both thrilled and honoured to be joined by the brilliant RJ Barker. RJ, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Richie. I am overjoyed to be here. So I love anything that lets me talk about me.
Well, I'm thrilled that you could join me, for one. I had the pleasure of meeting each other for the first time properly few weeks ago at the launch of Writing the Magic. I think it did on the night, I don't know if you remember, I told you about the first time we met, but I don't think you'd ever remember that. But it was very, very awkward for me. And it was a fantasy con. Probably during COVID when everyone was masked up. And it was the first convention I'd ever been to. I didn't know anybody. I was quite nervous. And I just sort of bundled myself into the lift as I got into the hotel. And the only person in there was yourself. I've read The Bone Ships, but I'd not seen a picture of you before. And I remember just standing there, just going, yeah, mate, so are you here for Fantasy Con as well? And I just looked down and I saw your name tag, and it's RJ Barker. And oh my God, the first thing I've said in the building, I've asked RJ Barker if he's here for Fantasy Con. Like such a fool.
No, but that's how I'm just some idiot. I'm not important. In any way, I'm just some idiot who's got really lucky. That's all it is. So I don't
agree with that. I mean, like, well, one thing that struck me with the talk about for writing the magic, just how, like, you just take this really philosophical approach to writing and the craft that I really like, and I sort of relate to it quite a lot. It's sometimes you do find it quite hard to explain what you do. It just things just happen, and you just go along with it.
Yeah, that's my method. I have like a few rough ideas when I start. So I got an email from a lovely American girl who was asking me about in lots of depth, and it was really interesting to see how far people go into stuff. And I always think my replies must be really disappointing because they're expecting me to go, oh, like I've got a whole book written about this world, and really I have like three or four pointers, and then I just write a novel and see where we end up, and it'll probably be all right if I keep at it. And I think the best thing I was ever told was I can't remember who told it to me, was that novel writing is time travel, so you can realize like right at the end of the book that you need Jeffrey the Talking Goat in chapter one, and you just travel back in time to chapter one and you just put him in. So I never really worry about getting stuff right when I'm doing it. I do it and then I can make it right later on. That's the fun bit. Did I tell you that Dan bullied me into writing that article for
writing? he didn't say that.
he did. He, because I did a short story for him. For the Robert Holstock anthology, which was really nice because I won the Holstock Award.
And congratulations.
I wasn't aware of Mythago Wood when I won it, but I found out that he wrote the novelization that came with the original Commodore 64 game of Elite, which I was obsessed with when I was about 15, 16. And I loved that book. And I've always wanted to read, I always wanted to be more of it. And his widow wrote to me to say congratulations, and I just was raving about how this book was just brilliant, I have since read Mythago Wood, and it is astounding, but I'm still kind of, I'm more there for his Elite book. But that's not what we're saying, is it? I'm very easy to get sidetracked. Yeah, Dan said to me, I'm doing a thing about writing fantasy. Will you write an essay on how to write fantasy? And I said, well, I don't really believe in that sort of thing. I don't think you can necessarily teach somebody to write. I think you learn to write by writing. And Dan went, well, you could say that. And I was like, I don't think I will, actually, Dan. And he went, well, somebody needs to say it. And I was going, no, I don't think I will. And then I went away, and I had an idea, which is just lethal when you're a writer to have an idea. And I just thought, I'll just sketch out a few things. And I ended up with this ridiculous essay that I sent to Dan and just said, I've done this. I don't think it makes any sense, but read it and see what you think. And he went, yeah, we'll put that in. So that's how I, but I was tricked, basically. He's a very bad man,
I
Dan Coxon.
have to get him back now. I have to plot revenge.
I'm going to do an anthology and I'm going to make him be in it.
Yeah,
It's
we
that
can
sound,
write a really long story.
yeah, but it sounds like a lot of work, an anthology, and I'm not a big fan of doing work, if I'm honest.
Avoid it if possible. He's just
Yeah.
got a new book out as well, for Halloween. Quiet Stories, I think, Drunk Quiet Tale. So yeah, put a link for that in the description. Anyway, enough of Dan. Dan's been on the show twice.
See.
Go back and listen to the previous episode as well.
Yeah.
So I'd say, what was it like? Did you always want to be a writer growing up, or is it
No.
something that you just kind of fell into and realized you loved?
I always read. I was always a big reader, constantly reading whatever I could get my hands on. But I wanted to be a rock star because it genuinely never occurred to me that a kid from a working class house in Leeds could write books. That was just not on my radar. I think I might have written a few short stories when I was quite young, but not in any serious manner. And then I was always like tall and skinny and not very blokey. I saw Poison and Guns N' Roses and all those glam bands.
Nice.
And I thought, I could do that.
Yeah.
I could look like that quite easily. And I did. And I played in loads of bands, but I was rubbish. Terrible musician. I looked great.
What's your instrument?
I was a bass player, but I was awful. I was just rubbish. I just couldn't keep time. And I had a really good time. I enjoyed myself. And then I was in a band with a friend of mine, who weirdly have just reformed. They're called Sugar Valve, and they're really good. They're playing in Leeds next week, and when I'm not here, or I would go see them.
Nice.
And I kind of realised I just couldn't keep up. Whatever I did, I just couldn't keep up, and there was no pleasure in it because I wasn't good enough. But I knew I wanted to do something creative. I didn't want to do like a proper job because I'm really bad at doing as I'm told. And I thought, well, what else do I love? And I thought books. And then I thought, yeah, my dad was right. I shouldn't have bunked off the last 2 years of school. That was a bad move. So I had to teach myself really to write. And it took 13 years of doing it. And I was ill in the middle, and so that got in the way a bit. But mostly, I taught myself to write by writing. And I did a lot, which I think we all do at the beginning, of listening to what other people said I should do, and found that that was always wrong, and never helpful. And it wasn't until that there's a writer called Chas Brenchley who wrote a book called Dead of Light. I think it's out of print now, but it's fantastic, and it's based in Liverpool, actually.
All right.
It's really good. It's about a crime family that have kind of very slight magical powers, but they only work at night. And this boy who is one of them doesn't want to be a criminal, and his powers work during the day. Metaphor. Well done, Chas. But I love that book. I think it's fantastic.
Sounds
And
great.
It's really good if you can get hold of it. But he said a thing. He said, what works for you is what works.
Yeah.
And when I read that was like, right. Yeah, that works. And I had it stuck to my computer for ages, just that. And I would just write the stuff that I wanted to write. And eventually it worked out, which was a bit, I didn't expect it to. I think
Yeah.
by the time I knew how unlikely it was that you'd ever make a living as a writer, I'd approached the sunk cost fallacy part of it, and I was just, well, I'm not giving up. I've put too much into this. There's nothing else I can do. So I'm going to carry on. And I got my agent, Ed, and he's been really good for me, and we've done all right, touch wood.
Yeah, it was fantastic. And it's a fantastic story as well. Just a real lesson in like not giving up, pursuing your dreams, and
Yeah.
constantly growing. And well, one thing I found really interesting is that like you taught yourself, which I taught myself, really hats off to you, because it doesn't there's all it's all down to you, isn't it?
Yeah.
And when it comes to writing the stories and practicing, you do have to go through so many drafts, and so like you sit there and test ideas, realize they don't work at like sort of critical points and stuff like that. And then but like it's just like to pick yourself back up then and to go at it
Yeah.
again. I honestly think like that is probably one of the biggest ingredients you need to succeed in writing, is that sort of perseverance, that resilience, the will to go on.
There's part of me that's really useful. Like I'm not a shouty or a confrontational person, but I am incredibly stubborn. Just my mum has always said, you can tell me not to do something, and if I want to do it, I'll say, all right, I won't do it, and then I will just do it anyway because I've made up my mind I'm going to do it, and that's part of my personality. And I think a really useful skill for a writer is when somebody says no to you, to have your reaction be, okay, well, I'm going to prove you wrong. And that's kind of my reaction to every rejection was always, no, I'm going to prove you wrong. I'm going to do it. The just pig-headed, stubborn, silly reason. So it's constantly like picking yourself up. There's always a reason to carry on. There's just a I'm going to do it.
I love that attitude as well. Again, I could put it at the same thing. Like, and there's been so many times throughout like life where people have said, like, you can't do this, you're not good enough for that. And you just go out and prove them wrong. And do you think, I mean, I'm from Liverpool, pretty working class area. I mean, do you think being from a working class background where you've had to sort of fight a bit more, do you reckon that has given you that sort of mentality? That sort of stubbornness and sort of will to prove people wrong.
It probably is partly that, and partly I've never been someone that fitted in. I've never felt like I quite fitted in. I've always felt like I was slightly the outsider, and I think that being that is sort of a. It definitely allows you to think about, well, I'm going to be me. I'm going to do that thing that I want to do. And I think that's useful. And that's it. But I think you can be from anywhere and find it. It is a lot easier, I imagine, if you have don't have to worry about buying food at the end of the week, which I get really cross when people go on about, oh, you've got to suffer for your art, which is not true. I definitely make much better art now that I'm not worried about losing my house. That stuff doesn't help. It weighs on you, and it can help feed into what you want to do, but don't hang on to it. I'm always bemused by people that seem to just be so distressed by writing and miserable doing it, because I just think you're choosing to do it.
Gotcha.
It's your choice. If it makes you miserable, don't do it. Find some other outlet that won't do that. But that's we can only be us, because that's me. I don't do anything that makes me miserable. I just quit. I mean, I don't like this. I'm stopping. I'll do something else.
So you said that it took you like 13 years before you felt like you reached that level. Is there some point, or well, in that 13-year period where you felt like you'd moved up a gear, that you were reading back on what you'd done, or you were getting feedback from people, and you were like, this is good now. And can you remember what you were doing around that time that you feel helped you take it to the next level?
The only time I can like be absolutely sure that I did something and knew I'd moved up a gear, was when I wrote Age of Assassins, which came. Actually, I wrote a crime novel that I finished it and thought that works in a different way to my other stuff. But the main character in it was a lesbian Sikh police officer, and I immediately put it in a. I just thought, well, I can't write that book. It's not my book to write. That's not my experience. Let's put that in a drawer. And maybe we'll use that story in a different way, where I'm not trying to steal someone else's personality. And it felt better. And then I wrote a science fiction novel, which with my agent at the time, I got an agent through that, through the beginning of it, and that felt better, but still not right. And we did a lot of faffing around with it. And then it went to market, and while it was at market, I had a really weird experience because I kind of froze and I couldn't write because I didn't know what was going to happen. And then when market events turned around, I said, "Well, actually, this is not for us." My agent said, "Oh, I'm really," he was called Rob Dinsdale, he's a lovely man. He said, "I'm really sorry, it didn't sell," and he clearly expected me to be quite depressed or sad. But I was just like, "Brilliant! I can write now. I'm free. I can do a thing." And I had an idea that became Age of Assassins, and I wrote it in 6 weeks, and I finished it and literally thought, "This is the one. This is the book that will sell." And then Rob sacked me as a client, which was not what I wanted. He sent me an email and he said, "Good news, this is a really good book. Bad news, I'm afraid I'm gonna have to let you go." Because
Oh, no way.
he was a writer as well, and he needed more time to concentrate on his work, and he kept sort of the clients that were making him money and the ones that weren't.
I
But
bet he
he,
regrets it now.
yeah, well, no, I think he's a writer full time now, so he didn't care. He's lovely, I really like him. But he put me in touch with Ed, who is my agent now, and Ed read it and came back to me within a week, and he more or less said, I know I can sell this." And I signed with his agency, and it's lovely because if I wasn't working with him as my agent, I'd want to be his mate because I like him. He makes me laugh. And he knows all the stuff that I don't and have no interest in. I'm not interested in the business of publishing or any of that. I want to write books, and I write books and send them to him. And he either does something with them, or he desperately tries not to talk to me about them, which I know means he hates it and doesn't want to say that to me. So I write something else in that case. What is this? There's a book he's had for about 6 years that he'll get. He's got that on his computer. And I'll say, "Have you looked at that yet?" And he went, "Oh, it's in my list." And in the meantime, I'll send him a new book and he'll get that. And he'll say, "Well, I think we should move this to the beginning because you're excited about this now. We'll look at this one now." And I'm like, "Yeah, I know what you're doing, Ed. You're putting me off. One day we'll get to that book." But I don't mind because I write quite a lot, so it's not really, I'm not that precious about stuff.
you by the sounds of it, very prolific. Like even like we see must see only like the tip of the iceberg. So do you have like a sort of set routine that you follow and try and aim like daily word count targets and stuff? What's your process like?
I do now. I get up, and I write between 1 and 2,000 words in the morning, because the bed builders in, and they've kind of conditioned me into waking up at 7 o'clock, which I hate with a passion, but I can't get out of it now. I'm a stay in bed for a long time and go to bed early person. That's I'm inherently a lazy human being. So I do about 2,000 words in the morning, and then I might go back and do more later on, or I might do something else. I might play video games, which I class as research personally.
Yeah, same.
It's very important. It's important research to kill people with a sword in a video game. It needs to be done. But sometimes an idea will grab me and I will do nothing but write it. Like my next book that comes out next year, Mortadent's Peril. I wrote that between the Weirdwood books, which have just the last one came out in June, July, of that trilogy. And I wrote it between books one and two because I had a really clear idea and it made me happy and I wanted to do it. And I wrote that in about 6 or 7 weeks as well. Because, but that's kind of manic when that happens. And I'm quite a chill person, but sometimes that when I know, I'm like, yeah. And that was another one that I finished and thought, yeah, this is good. This is good in a different way to my other stuff. So obviously, clearly, if I write things really quickly, that's, I think it's because it's
It's a good sign.
pleasurable. Yeah.
But it's
And
almost
then,
like you channeled, you sort of locked into something and you're getting it all out there before you sort of, almost before the sort of the door closes.
Yeah, very, it's very much like that. It's gonna go, oh, quick, get this out. But then, if I'm doing edits or copy edits or page proofs, which are the, do your readers know the stages of a book? Or should I outline them
You
briefly?
kind of outline them, yeah.
Yeah, you send in your book to your editor, and then your editor comes back with an edit letter and notes on the thing for how they think you can improve it. And it's a dialogue between you and the editor, and you can decide to or not to take their comments however you wish. I really enjoy that process, and I like to work with, and I do usually find editors are really good at pointing out the things that I have gone, oh, get away with that. And I never do. They would put, well, this doesn't work. I just go, oh, okay. So you do that. That's probably about 3 months for that process. And then usually you do a second round of edits where you pick up stuff like little bits that can be smoothed out, made a little better. And then usually a third that I'd never really count because that is like tiny things. That's just, and they're a couple of weeks each at the most. And then you get copy edit, which is where somebody who understands grammar, which I must stress I do not, I'm very much a vibes writer. I want the voice of the book to be as, like the Weirdwood books are difficult to read, and it's a very deliberate choice to make them deliberate and a bit confusing because I want you as the reader to be uncomfortable. But grammatically, I suspect, well, they do make a lot of people cross. But I don't mind that. It's an artistic
By
choice on my
design.
part. Yeah. So, and if you can say, yeah, I did it on purpose, that's fine, even if you don't like I said. So you get the copy edit back and you read through what the copy editor has done, how they've corrected it, and make sure it doesn't interfere with your voice too much. Like when I did the Assassin books, I use a floating tense. So in action sequences or when there's magic, it changes from past to present tense. And the copy editor put it all right, so it was all past tense. So I had to go back through that, putting it back to how I wanted it because you have an idea. So it's stuff like that, just checking that it's right. That's about 2 weeks. And then page proofs is when you get what the book will look like. And you go through and you check it for really obvious like typos and stuff, and you highlight them so they can act on them. And that's about 2 weeks as well. But when I'm doing those edits, copy edits, page proofs, I work a 9 to 5 day, really. Well, 8 till 4 day.
I suppose if you've got that quick turnaround, you need to dedicate a good bit of time to
And I genuinely don't know how writers who have a day job as well do it. I just don't understand it. It's beyond me.
energy drinks and caffeine. That's what I do. I just come home, I get like a can of Monster,
I know it's Jenna, so it's
and
kind of Monster.
that'll be me then until like 10, and then by
Yeah.
10 I'm sort of. If I'm on, like you say before, if you've got an idea and it's exciting you, then you'll go all night.
Yeah.
Well, 5 out of 10, I'm like, I need to start winding down now because I've got work in the morning.
Yeah, it's not. I don't think it's good for you as well either,
No,
to be.
it catches up.
Yeah. What do you do as a proper job? Are you like, can you say you've
I'm
got it out?
a marketing manager, so I did digital marketing, SEO, search engine optimization for law firms. So I used to be a lawyer. And didn't like that job, so I quit to be a writer. Ran out of money, ran an Irish pub for a few years, and then realized, well, that was just too much. It was like 7 days a week. It was not, it was good fun, but once you spend that much time in a pub, you end up hating pubs. And I like to enjoy pubs. So, and then I ended up getting this job as a copy editor, and then ended up doing management and search engines, which is gone crazy at the minute because of AI.
That's a really interesting arc that gives you loads of really interesting experiences as well.
Yeah, I
That's,
think it does. Yeah, I
I always wish
mean,
I'd
that's
been a
so
lawyer.
what I do now, but I like the psychology, and it does help with writing because big challenge for a lot of like upcoming writers is getting your work out there and in terms of readers, and it's helped a bit with that.
I think that's why I never doubted that I wanted to be published through a big traditional publisher,
Yeah.
because I'm absolutely not suited to the self-publishing model. I see how hard they have to work, and I don't want to have to work that hard.
Yeah.
It's not. I want to write. That's what I like and what I'm good at, and all the other stuff is incidental to that. But I know a few self-published authors, and they're basically their own little publishing company, and it's
Yeah.
so hard. I couldn't do it. I don't know how. There's nothing but admiration for them. Astounding.
Yeah. If you do hit this, hit a good run of success with it, like it is brilliant, but it's a lot of work, like you say, and it saps your time sometimes having to worry about, oh, now I've got to do a social media post, now I've got to do a newsletter, I've got to do a podcast, and then somewhere you've got to write. So it's, I think for a lot of people, they get sapped, the time and energy gets sapped by all these extra things that you've got. This whole industry has like sprung up around self-publishing, and people are saying you've got to do this, you've got to do that, you've got to do so many posts a week on TikTok. And I think people just find it really overwhelming. And like you say, we just need to go back to the reason why we started on this path in the first place, which is writing
Right, a good
and
thing.
enjoy that.
Yeah, I mean, in the end, I love to write, and I wouldn't do it if I didn't.
Yeah.
It's the thing that I want to be doing. I just and if I don't do it, I get antsy. Like last year, I was really poorly, and that's how I knew I was properly ill, is that I didn't write for 3 months,
Yeah.
and that's ill, because I'm not doing that thing that I'm probably driven to do in an
Yeah.
obsessive fashion that maybe isn't healthy, but if you get enjoyment from it, it's not. I can't remember who said it to me. Someone said that I'm probably neurotypical, but it doesn't actually cause me any problems. So I'm not interested in looking into that. But
Yeah.
it's I like I said in my essay, I'm always really wary about looking into the method of how I write, in case I end up tripping over myself and finding I can't do it, because that's the terror, that you see a blank page and suddenly it's a frightening thing, not an invitation to
Yeah.
scribble down a load of nonsense about.
it comes to scribbling down things, like what do you feel like the most important element of a story is?
People.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everything else is people go on and on about world building, but it doesn't matter if your people aren't real. People need to be real, and people need to be able to identify with them and understand them and want to follow their story.
Yeah.
And everything else is just window dressing for that. It's why I don't feel there's a tremendous amount of difference between science fiction and fantasy and crime. Even literature, I'm putting air quotes around that, because it's all about writing people. It's just the clothes they're wearing is genre. So I'm an absolute tart. I would write anything given the chance, but
Yeah.
I think I'd fail at literature because I've not read enough serious fiction to do it. But when will this come out?
Well, it's actually going to be the Christmas special.
A Christmas special. Oh, right. Well, Merry Christmas,
Merry
first of
Christmas,
all.
everyone.
Merry Christmas,
Yeah,
everyone. If it was actually Christmas, all my stuffed animals in the other room would have Christmas hats on, which is just. But yeah, people. I like people. I've always liked people. I think you have to, if you're a writer. You have to at least be interested. Well, you can not like them, but you have to be interested in them.
curiosities. So how would you, when you sort of create a character, how would you get to know them then and bring them to life?
God, you could ask this. I've no idea at all. I just write them. And I put them into terrible, terrible situations.
Yeah.
I have noticed I really like people who are maybe not very likable, and for reasons. A lot of my characters are people who. There's a really good. I've got a friend called Mark Cattley, who's a playwright and a TV writer, and he said, this is a writing course actually I went on because my wife made me, and it was about writing for theatre, which had
Yeah.
always interested me, and I didn't actually know at the time. I turned up and went, oh, it's about theatre. Oh, okay. But that was actually a really lovely moment because I finished that course and I really enjoyed it. And as I was coming out, Mark Cattley just grabbed hold of me and he went, I just want you to know, some people come through here and I think you have definitely got it. And he went, and you have definitely got it. So
Nice.
don't quit, which was lovely. But he talked about character and said a thing that I'd always been doing, but his way of describing it was really obvious and made sense, which is every character wants something and needs something. And the more at odds those two things are, the more interesting they become as a person.
Yeah.
And most of my characters think they want to be left alone, and what they actually want is a bit of a hug. It usually in a more violent way than that, given the way my fiction works, but I think you can put that on all of them in some way, especially Iridi, who is the kind of hero of the Nexus of Mordredant's peril, who is de he's someone who terribly frightened of getting close to people, but desperately wants to be.
Yeah.
And unlike my other fantasy stuff, it's not a comedy, but there is humour in it. And I made my editor laugh out loud. And if you can do that, you're like, yes. Although it's not comedy, but it all comes from his inability to see himself, which I like that. People who are lying to themselves about who they are, that's a better way of putting it. That's what I like.
Yeah.
And I think I do that with a lot of my characters. That the main ones tend to be unaware of who they really are and the people around them see. And then they can go on a journey of discovery, because I like people to get better. Like Joran in the Bone Ships, when you meet him, he's a xenophobic drunk. He's awful. He would definitely have voted for Trump at that point in his life. He's deeply unpleasant. And his journey is about learn. It's one of acceptance and learning about other people. And I like the fact that if you take a character and you start them off in a bad place, you can push them to a better place and the people around them.
We've got a few more questions. One thing I always like to ask every writer when they come on the show is about the sort of the biggest challenge that they've faced in the career. So what about yourself? Like, has there been a point in time where you've hit a roadblock and it's been very difficult to get around it, but you managed to do it?
I think that comes back to the way I think is that I don't think in negatives.
Yeah.
I kind of think of everything as a challenge and a reason to do something.
Yeah.
It was quite difficult when I got ill and I'd not written for 4 months, and during those 4 months I wasn't even thinking about writing. And coming out of that, I was just kind of thinking, what if it's gone? What if I sit down and there isn't an idea? What do you do then? And I said to my agent, I said to Ed, what do I do if I sit down And he just said, "Don't be ridiculous. You're full of ideas.
Yeah.
You'll sit down and you'll write things." And he was right. I did. I sat down and I wrote stuff. So that was kind of the biggest one, but I don't know if I could even count that as a roadblock because it was a physical illness, which
Yeah.
is
I imagine though that the psychological it was a psychological challenge to like because for, to have been married to something for so long and enough to do for an extended period of time, I imagine there was an element of doubt there.
But again, it always comes down to that stubbornness. So
Yeah.
I'm not going to give it in. But I'm a huge fan of not seeing the negatives in things. Because
Yeah.
if like when I got, because I'm chronically ill, I'm never going to have a real job. And people go, "Oh, that must be terrible for you." And I was like, "Well, no. It gave me time to write." It gave me
Yeah.
time to do nothing but write and get quite good at it and get a book deal. And that probably wouldn't have happened if I'd had to have a real job at the same time because I'm really lazy. So everything has a plus and a minus. And probably part of the reason I was really ill is that I've been writing constantly for 30 years and should have listened to my wife when she was going, "You really should take a break. Just have a holiday." So I was like, "Oh, okay." So I had an enforced holiday
Yeah.
when I had to lie on the couch and do nothing but watch Bangers and Cash. Might have been Bangers and Cash. It wasn't very good, whatever it was I watched. It was rubbish. But when you're really out of it, you don't care. You're so, well, this
Yeah.
is interesting. I don't even like cars, but I thought, "Oh, what's this man?"
3 seasons in.
Yeah. It was a bit like that.
I do that sometimes. I just get really into like random reality shows like Gold Rush.
Yeah.
Watch like 8 seasons of Gold Rush. It's about fellas trying to mine gold.
I
Like, it's
don't
not
think
even that interesting.
it was Bangers and Cash. It was a bloke and they just bought cars and did them up.
Yeah, that was Bangers and Cash. Wait, but there's probably so many other variations.
Yeah, there's a bloke in it called Adam Milliard, who's a proper he's this like quite quietly spoken man. And you wouldn't think anything of him if you met him. And then you see what he does for fun, that he took the V12 engine out of a Dodge Viper and made a motorbike out of it. It's like, "You, sir, are a true English lion who should be
Yeah.
respected, because that's mental. That's absolutely off its box." So I'm glad I found out about him. But yeah, that was the nearest I think I came to a cycle. I think
I
you're.
suppose if you like that kind of thing, I mean, I like watching these reality shows for the same reason you said before, because we're interested in people. And these are often high conflict situations. Which for writers, like they're the kind of situations we like to create. So it's like almost like little watching little experiments of seeing how people respond under stress.
Yeah,
And then it gives you a bit of inspiration.
I think when you start out as a writer and in the early times, it is quite difficult to get past that idea of how do I do this thing?
Yeah.
And to because our art is awful in that there isn't a way of doing it. There's only your way of doing it, and you can only find that by doing it. And I think also that there's quite a demoralizing moment when you know you're pretty good, but you're not good enough, and how to get over that hump is really difficult. You feel like there should be a trick, like there should be. Like people should be paying attention to you actually, but maybe I'm not quite there. And in both those situations, you kind of realize in hindsight the only way to get through them is to write.
Yeah.
That's all you can do. Just you become a writer by writing, and if you're not in the place you want to be, you have to write more. You know, just really frustrating and unfair. There should be a book, but the book can't give you that thing
Yeah.
that is you.
It's like you say, you've got to get into that space where you write Assassin's Apprentice 6 weeks back.
Yeah, 6 weeks down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go. So, last question for you, RJ. One I always like to ask because you have a lot of new writers listening to the show. So, what would be your best piece of advice? You've given a lot of brilliant advice, by the way. I can kind of guess what you're going to say to this as well. But one piece of advice now, above all else, to any new writers listening now, what would you say to them?
Well, Chas Brench's advice is what works for you is what works. That's not my advice, but it is very good advice. But I would say that to concentrate on enjoying it, because the more you enjoy it, the more you'll do it. And if you've enjoyed the doing of it, if you write a novel and you enjoy the doing of it, and you don't get an agent, or it doesn't take off, that's disappointing. But you still enjoy the doing of it, and the doing of it will keep you going if you're doing it for the love of it. So just really try and enjoy it. Don't think past that moment of writing the book and enjoying it, because all the other stuff is really out of your control. It's like when I first signed with Orbit, they send you the password for book scan, so you can see in real time how your books are selling. You can like see it. And the first thing I did was put that in the bin. Because you can't control that. It's just going to send you mad. You're just going to sit there looking. And I know writers have, they just sat there looking at it, and it's like, no, well, don't do that. Write your next book, because that's the thing you can control. You can always control that, and write the book, and find great joy in it. Because that's the only reason I do it, is I love doing it. As I said, everything I don't love, I just quit. I'm just like, oh, I'll do that. Every job I've ever had, I'm like, no, I've done this for a bit now, and it's not for me.
That's brilliant advice. And you know what? It's something that I always end up coming back to when the weight of the world gets on top of you, and you feel like, what the hell's it all for? You realize why you started it, and it's part of your life, writing and something you absolutely love. So,
It's not about selling books. It is to some degree about wanting people to share your story. I think that's inescapable, but it, the most of it is that desire to put the words on the page and make the thing that seems impossible, to create a world and people that have never existed before that can only come from you. That is properly amazing. No matter what it does afterwards, it's still amazing that you did that thing. Anyone who does it is just astounding.
It is. And that's, I mean, this is another talking point for another day, but that's why I don't think AI will ever replace writers, because
No.
we're so creative. We come up with these brilliant things that is so unique. And
And it will only it's only ever an echo of what's been. Where we it you take your influences and you create something new with them. Where it takes its influences and creates something that is what has already gone. It's just another version of it. And it'll never. It'll never keep, and people want, they want to interface with people. They want to be able to talk about the book. It's like they've done that. They say, oh, you'll be able to make your own AI films and series, but that misses the point of art. Because the point of art is not to have your own little thing. The point of art is to discuss it with other people and find meaning through that. And you won't have that if everyone's like looking at their own little thing that they've made up.
So we'll always be living in our own bubbles.
Yeah, it's not good for anyone. We need
No.
people.
Ajay, thank you so much for
It's
giving up
been
the time to
brilliant.
chat with me. I've enjoyed it. I've learned so
Yeah.
much. And I'm sure people have learned an awful lot at home as well.
I hope I've made sense. I am so tired.
Alright, you're going now.
Yeah, I had a really busy week last week. Did a lot of driving, which is kind of, I have an electric car that does most of it for me, but I'm still tired out. It's been lovely. I really enjoyed it, Richie.
Thank you very much,
Thanks
RJ.
ever so much.
Where's the best place to go for anyone who would like to check out more of you and your writing?
Oh, you can go to my website, which is rjbarker.co.uk, or I am on Blue Sky. I'm posting sometimes a lot and sometimes not at all, depending on how I feel. That's probably the best places, really.
Nice,
You can always
nice.
contact me through my website. That's easy. And and always say hello to me on Blue Sky. I'm quite chatty, as you
There
may have
you
noticed.
go. Ajay, thank you again, and good luck
Thank
with all
you.
the new books.
Thank you. Bye bye.
Thank you for listening to the Fantasy Writers Toolshed. If you'd like to join our writing community on Discord and get access to fantasy writing classes and books on Patreon, check the links in the description. And if you don't want to miss any future episodes, be sure to follow or subscribe. And to support the show, leave a quick rating on Spotify or iTunes and share this episode on social media or with anyone who you think may be interested. Thank you very much for listening.
Everything has a price, and the price of freedom is greater than all else. The story of conquest shows the brutality of war and the cost of freedom. It shows the sacrifice it takes and the hardships those who fight for it endure. In conquest, nothing is sugar-coated. Every detail brings the world to life, and every character, city, and kingdom has something unique about it that keeps you intrigued. In a world filled with complacency, be different. Join the rebellion today and fight for freedom. The Quest for Freedom is available on Amazon, Google Play, Apple Books, and Kobo. Use code FANTASY for $3 off on the official site.